podcast for all your running needs.
Ned, he was a terminally happy guy. And Ned, he ate a moldy pumpkin pie. And Ned, he thought that he just couldn't die. And Ned, he laughed so hard that made me cry.
Welcome to the Run, Run, Live podcast, the podcast for runners, wannabe runners, and mid-packers of all contours and configurations.
I want to be a runner.
Who desire to find
out. Do you want to be a runner?
Their preference.
We want to be runners.
A footwear, and get out there.
Obviously, this is not Chris, your masters of ceremonies. This is Sean and Jason from
Trilogy Running!
When you're done listening to the Run, Run, Live podcast, come visit the younger and more exuberant podcast called Trilogy Running.
At
trilogyrunning.com, where we giggle, talk trash, take the occasional pee, and answer all those mysterious questions about the infamous about the mysterious poop.
So wherever and whenever this episode finds you, I hope you're doing great, and I hope you're getting your run in today. I know I'm getting my run in today.
We
ready to have some fun? Come on then, let's go for a run.
You let me around on a leash.
That was different. We thought you were inferior.
Now you know better.
Hey, this is Chris. Welcome. Episode 74 of the Run, Run, Live podcast. So today I'm talking to you from my truck because I'm really busy and I'm hoping to get all this stuff in today. Got a lot going on. So I apologize in advance for the audio quality. Today we're going to interview my friend, my friends from Vibram or Vibram. He told me I could say it either way. And these are the guys who make the five-fingered shoes, and they also make their specialty is soles. And they just, you know, recently, I think, and recently being a relative term, got into doing running shoe soles, as well as I think they started with mountaineering and hiking and a lot of like skiing and motocross, and they have all kinds of different stuff. But it was amazing to me how much thought and engineering goes into the sole of a shoe. The outsole is what they call it, and it's really interesting. So before we go any further, remember, I'm giving away five pairs of we're giving away, it's not me, these Vibram guys are giving away five pairs of Patagonia Release trail shoes. Nice trail shoes. I'm running in them. I ran in them last night. And they got great lugs, great lug system. They really shoot the mud out. They don't pick up mud. You know, they're a little stiff, a little sturdy, so you really want to be in the woods with them. You don't want to run on the road or anything hard with them. But great technical trail shoes. I mean, they're really going to help you from wrecking your feet if you get some technical. Now, what do I mean when I say technical? When trail guys or mountain bike guys or anybody says the trail's a little bit technical, what that means is there's huge rocks and roots, and it's really steep, and it's just gnarly to run on. You know, so that's what technical means, right? So a dirt road is not technical. The Wapak Trail Race is technical. So I'm going to do that. So go to my website, www.runrunlive.com. Put an entry. There's a section called Forum, F-O-R-E-M. I spelled it that way because otherwise the internet spam bots search on forums and try to put entries into your forums because they like doing that. The other thing is it's moderated, so put your entry in. You won't see it right away. I have to approve it, but I check once or twice a day my website. So go do that and win yourself a pair of shoes. So I've been having a crazy week, not getting much running in. I actually ran last night with the dog, but that was the first time since Friday because I've been mountain biking every day and going out and discovering new trails and stuff. And it's a lot of fun because on the mountain bike, it extends your range. You know, these trails were within 3 miles of my house, but I never found them because at that point I'm turning around to go home most of the time, and I'm not out. But with the mountain bike, you get to extend that range. So even these trails that are 5, 6, 7 miles away, since I'm going longer and faster, I can find these trails. So I found some cool trails. So that's been a very, very cool part of this mountain biking thing. And I'm starting to get my balance. I'm starting to get my... I was out with Anthony, and, you know, being out with Anthony is cool. It's like he's like a rock star in the mountain biking sport, so I have to sort of tag along behind him. And what we'll do is I'll go cruising through some obstacle, like a stone wall or a swamp, and I'll crash, and Anthony will say, okay, here's, let me show you how you're supposed to do that. And he'll show me the line of how to drive through and over the rocks and not kill myself. And he'll make me do it again until I get it right. So it's pretty good. I learn a lot. I'm learning a lot. So I'm signed up for that 100-mile race. That'll be cool. I'm pretty confident that I can do it. It's just a question of speed. But even with my, you know, only being in this sport for a couple of weeks now, I'm pretty sure I'll finish in the top 20% in this race. You know, if I was making some jokes about bikers, you know, anybody can ride a road bike. You know, it's really easy. You know, I'm not saying the pros are, it's easy being a pro. I mean, it's a tough sport. But for your average Joe to get on a bicycle and ride it is a lot easier than your average Joe strapping on a pair of running shoes and going out and running 5-6 miles. So I think the barrier to entry on bicycles is a lot lower, and the workout's a lot less. So if I do the same route on my feet, same route on my bike, you're working harder when you're running it. Your heart rate's more constant. You're not gliding, you know, that sort of thing. On the bike, it's harder in spots because the steep uphills, you really max your heart rate. I mean, my heart rate's going way higher than anything I would do while I was running. When I'm going up those steep uphills or through some really technical spots, some rock gardens, you're resting a lot more. So it's, in total, I think the biking is easier. The other thing on the mountain biking is you get a tremendous upper body workout because you're always hanging on for dear life and trying to steer around obstacles, and you use your quads and your glutes and a lot of times your abdominals to physically, you know, manhandle that bike around obstacles. So that's what I've been doing, man. I hope you guys have been having a great week. I mean, I love this weather. Well, not the weather, but the fact that the sun stays up till 9 o'clock at night here at this time of year in New England. So I'm finding that I'm not going to bed till like 11:30 midnight and not being able to get out of bed early because we just got so much sunlight. I want to stay out and enjoy it. It's been raining like crazy here, so we only get like one nice day a week. I've only got out on my motorcycle once this week. Got a lot going on. So, hey, hope you enjoy the show. Oh, yeah, I'm going to do a little commercial here. Not commercial, a little parody. There goes the school bus. I'm going to do a little parody. This is the Planet of the Apes parody, so you know what's going on. There's a cool movie back in the 1970s called Planet of the Apes, and the lines that Joe is going to speak in this parody are actually directly from the Planet of the Apes movies. These are lines that the main character spoke in Planet of the Apes. So if you don't get the joke, it's okay. But Joe's so funny. All right, man. On with the show.
And now for the equipment check.
Hey, Chris. It's Long Island Runner, also known as Joe, saying hi to you and to Buddy the Wonder Dog, and also finally calling in to give you my review on Gracie's Gear running bra that she so graciously sent me free of charge. It's awesome. Until then, I never really wore a running bra, didn't know how to go about purchasing a running bra, and I paid for it dearly. I never took any pictures, and I should have, but after every run, I would have chafe marks that were just bleeding. Showers afterwards were just not fun at all. Since having Gracie's long tank is what I have, she sent me the black one that has the pink stripe. I haven't had any chafing. I love that I can put my wallet, my iPhone, and my car keys in that in the pocket right on the bra and run footloose and fancy free. Just completed a track workout today for the first time and had my iPhone and wallet and my keys right there. Got myself a short extended headphones and listened to Podrunner's 180 beats per minute while I did my workout, and I nailed it. So awesome not to have to worry about where to put things. It's just great. I do put my iPhone inside a Ziploc bag because I'm just too chicken. Because I don't always sweat, but I'm afraid that when I sweat that it might mess up the iPhone. And right now, financially, if something happens to my phone, I'm screwed. But I probably don't have to do that, but I just do that as a caution. But again, thumbs up, Gracie. It's awesome. I thank you, thank you, thank you. I understand you are about to have a baby or just had a baby. I certainly hope everything went well and you have a healthy baby girl or boy. And I have to get in touch with you soon because I need more. I want to purchase probably one more long and definitely some of the short because to wear a shirt over the long tank, I find I'm way too hot. So I definitely want to get some of the short bras. But again, thumbs up, 5-star, 10-star, whatever. Huge success on my end. Sure, for anyone I talk to that has Gracie's running bra, has nothing but good things to say about them. Never chafe, never anything. And a great place to put our stuff, us women that have to carry stuff around. Hope everything's going well, Chris. Good luck on your runs with Buddy the Wonder Dog, and we will talk soon. Thanks again for including me on the podcast when you guys talked about Gracie's running bra. That was awesome. Hope everything's going well, and we'll talk soon. Bye.
Hey, Joe, this is a pretty nice planet we're exploring. I mean, except for the Death Valley-like deserts and the fact that we crashed our ship in a salt lake, it's actually pretty nice, huh?
It's a madhouse. A madhouse!
Well, I guess so, but this beach is pretty nice that we're running on. It reminds me of Cape Cod. You know, we astronauts have to stay in shape. Do you miss Earth as much as I do? I mean, is there someone waiting for you there?
Imagine me needing someone. Back on Earth, I never did. Oh, there were women. Lots of women. Lots of lovemaking, but no love. You see, that was the kind of world we'd made. So I left, because there was no one to hold me there.
Yeah, right. Hey, watch out for that piece of driftwood. Nice tumble, Joe. Hey, let me help you up there.
You take your stinking paws off me, you damned... dirty ape!
Okay, take it easy. Lighten up. Let's keep going down this beach until we find something. I'd love running on the beach. You're okay with that, right?
I'm a seeker, too. But my dreams aren't like yours. I can't help thinking that somewhere in this universe there has to be something better than man. Has to be!
Hey, check that out. What is that? Hey, that's the Statue of Liberty sticking out of the sand.
Oh, my God. I'm back. I'm home. All the time it was, oh, we really did it. You maniacs! You blew it up! Damn you! God damn you all to hell!
Man, you have to get your meds under control. You're freaking me out. I'm not running with you anymore unless you can stop acting so simian.
For our featured interview.
Lawrence, you there?
Yes.
All right, now we're recording.
Okay.
So let me introduce Lawrence here. He is the National Sales and Marketing Manager for Vibram USA, even though I always say Vibram. He tells me that I can use both. It's interchangeable.
That's absolutely right.
That's right. So we're going to talk about the Vibram Soles. So why don't you give me, you know, your 100 words on the company and the product and a little bit of the history? Just fill us in.
Sure. Well, Vibram is an Italian company, and it was founded in 1937 following the need for a solution to a problem. And there was an Italian mountain guide named Vitale Bramani who used to take expeditions up into the Alps. And in 1935 on Monte Rassica, one of his expeditions was stranded by an ice storm and a blizzard. after they'd changed out of their insulated boots and into their climbing shoes. And under those conditions, they were not able to descend safely. Six climbers died of frostbite and exposure.
Wow.
And Vitaly Bramani had the idea to create a sole that could be put on the insulated boot to allow a climber to climb from the bottom to the top of the mountain safely. And to do that, he engaged the help of one of his guiding clients, who was a member of the Pirelli family.
Okay.
And so the first Vibram sole was actually prototyped and then produced in the Pirelli tire factory outside Milan.
There you go.
Vitaly Bramani launched his business in 1937 and started providing rubber mountaineering soles with what became the famous Caramata lug design to mountaineers all over Italy and then in Europe. And that evolved into a significant business focused on soling for mountain sports like trekking, telemark skiing, rock climbing, and then evolved into other activities where grip and traction were essential, such as nautical usage for sailing, and more recently in sports that might be associated with the X Games and Generation X, such as snowboarding, where we've started to work with leaders like Burton and K2. So this is the evolution of what started out as a simple solution to a problem.
Right. I noticed that a lot in your product set is that a lot of the products are essentially solutions to a problem, right? So it's interesting how you basically start with a need and then you work backwards to a product.
That's exactly right.
Right. So I've been testing out, I've been running in the Patagonia Release running shoes with your sole on it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're doing the same thing. Starting with the need of the users is always a lot better idea than just trying to invent something and then figuring out how to make people use it, right?
Right, and then the filling to the cake is the Vibram tester team, and this is an essential element of how we develop product, is we've engaged world-class athletes, primarily in Europe, since that's where the company is based, but we've got world champions in multiple disciplines on our tester team, and they are probably the most important part of the evolution of Vibram design. So we'll prototype a sole based on our current understanding of lug function and sole function and rubber compounding, and then we'll put it out in the field with these world-class athletes from different disciplines like high-altitude distance running or snowboarding, mountaineering, even motocross, all sorts of disciplines, and get their feedback and incorporate it into the design.
This is pretty cool. The one question I had in terms of the company was, you guys focus on the sole, right? And how did, in the history of your company, how did you manage to just focus on that one component and not sort of get sucked into the whole system, the whole solution with the shoe and everything, right?
Well, I think historically the founder of the company recognized this need in the marketplace, initially for mountaineering, but then realized that he could create a meaningful business by providing premium outsoles where they didn't exist before, and then using a combination of design and rubber compounding and mold making to really elevate the basic sole into a high performance piece of equipment.
Right.
So I think that's really why Vibram has focused on soles for many years. Now, that's changing to a certain extent with the introduction of Vibram Five Fingers, but that's another story.
That's another beast entirely. The soles, if you look at the running shoes, right, they're all desperately trying not to be commoditized. They're trying very hard to become either brand or style or technology. And part of a running shoe technology, or any shoe technology, if you're going to try and differentiate on technology, is the sole, right? It's the cushioning system. So I can imagine you guys must have to work very hard to talk a shoe company into giving up that part of the technology that is the differentiator for them, right?
I mean, well, we encounter that in some cases, but honestly, it's more common that the premium brands are seeking out the performance benefits that can be added by a Vibram sole.
Right. So you actually have the differentiating competencies in the way in your understanding of the compounds and the manufacturer of those outsoles and all that, that stuff that they can leverage to differentiate their own shoe, right?
That's right. I mean, we feel it with 70 years of history of designing soles and formulating rubber compounds and creating the steel mold in which the soles are produced, integrating those three elements, we believe, is critical to making a high-performance sole. And, you know, we feel that we've got the longest experience and the best capabilities to bring all those elements together. So that's, I think, the advantage that we can offer to brands.
Right. So the metaphor I'd use is you're like the Intel inside in these,
right,
these
right.
shoes. And it's really, it's not as simple as people would think. You know, you're not just slapping a piece of rubber on a shoe, because you've got to understand what the shoe's being used for, which is what we talked about. But you've also got to understand the conditions, right? You've got to understand, is it going to be wet? Is it going to be hot? Is it going to be cold? And you have to design something that works in all those conditions or specific combinations of those conditions, right?
That's exactly right. And you know, there's sort of a pyramid coming down from the mountain. If you consider a pyramid, at the top of the mountain where you might encounter rock or ice, you might want a sole that is made with a relatively firm rubber compound and very deep lugs, which resist torsion and which have extended durability on rock.
Yep.
And the ability to really bite into soil and ice or packed snow surfaces for traction.
Right.
You come down the mountain and you're emphasizing speed and versatility over that high-altitude durability, and lug heights are necessarily going to come down to reduce weight. Base thickness will reduce to enhance flexibility. Lug spacing will change. If you're spending more time on soil than rock, you need lug spacing which emphasizes mud and soil release. So each sole really is fine-tuned for the end use. And then, of course, the compound is chosen for the specific design of the sole and the end use. Those things really go together.
Right. And I'll give you my specific experience. I mean, I've run all over the world, and I can tell you, running in up in Quebec City in the wintertime where it's minus 15 and the snow doesn't melt, you know, they have all these different types of snow. You need to hold, if you run in regular running shoes, they become like rocks. They freeze solid. It's like running with wooden shoes on, right? So, and the thing about, you're talking about the mud, if anybody's ever run in shoes that aren't designed for running in mud, it sticks in the lugs and makes your feet heavy, right? But
exactly.
I'll give you props for this, because when I was running in your soles, it definitely threw the mud out really, really well.
That's great, and that's something that we focus on in the design phase. There are little techniques that we use based on experience and feedback from the tester team that are based on the angles of adjacent lugs and the channels between lugs, and it's a mix of art and science to design a sole that's going to give you the traction that you need while still being able to shed mud. So it's a very, you know, very well thought out process.
Yep, and as well, you got to say, okay, how thick is it going to be? How wide is it going to be? Because some people, you know, like to feel the trail. Some people like to not feel the trail, depending on the conditions, right?
Right. Well, you brought up a good point earlier about making sure that the end use is driving the design, and that's something that's really critical at Vibram. And when we partner with our partners, our customers, we ask for a very detailed design brief so that we can understand the end use of the product, the customer who's going to be using it, and the footing conditions on which it's going to be used.
Right. Yep. And I was looking at your website. You have 15 or more different types of rubber or compounds that you can put into these things in different combinations, depending on what the surface and the application is.
Right, in a trekking boot, you want a compound that gives the best possible grip and traction with the extended durability that you'd want on a $150 or $250 piece of footwear. So there are balances and compromises that are being made. For rock climbing, obviously, pure friction is the most important feature that you can deliver or attribute you can deliver with a climbing compound. So the end use is critical to delivering the right sole and the right compound.
So what's the biggest aha moment you've had over the last couple of years in this process as you, you know, as you guys expand?
And one example would be the introduction of our HydroGrip moldable, sticky moldable rubber compound. You know, traction, slip resistance in wet conditions is really sort of a holy grail. And there have been good products out on the market, but we've been able to develop one that, according to our key customers, is now the benchmark in the industry for a moldable compound for wet slip resistance.
So for like the marine application where you get people on boats and that sort of thing?
That's right, or for river guiding or particularly fly fishing.
Huh.
Another reason that it's relevant for fly fishing now is that the previous, you know, benchmark for slip resistance in fly fishing applications was felt-bottom sole. But felt-bottom soles are being outlawed to help reduce the transfer of aquatic nuisance species from one body of water to another. So rubber soles are the solution, and it's, you know, it's critical to have the best possible wet slip resistance in that environment. And our HydroGrip compound seems to really be performing in the category.
That's cool. And if you look at the bottom of the shoes, sometimes they come in layers. I know I had a problem with one of my pair of shoes where the lugs were sort of like pasted on and they came off. You know, they
really
peeled off. Those are not your shoes, somebody else's shoes.
Okay.
But, you know, talk about the technology of how those soles are put together, because you look at the bottom of shoe and sometimes there's different colors, there's different types of material. You know, what's the process to put that stuff together?
Right. Well, you know, an outsole is molded with composition rubber under heat and pressure. A multicolor sole is molded in the same way, but the accent color used in a sole has to be positioned in the mold at an intermediary process. And in order to get the perfect bond between two different compounds or two different colors, you really have to have an expertise in not only the rubber formulation, the chemical aspects of rubber formulation, but also the knowledge of the amount of heat and pressure and time used to make the sole. And so a sole that separates at a color juncture is just not properly formulated or properly manufactured.
Right. Yep. I had a pair of those. Now we're mowing the lawn in them.
All right. Well,
what would you say people should, you know, if you could talk to people one-on-one in the world, what would you tell them the top, you know, one or two, three things are to look for when they're looking at shoes and soles?
Well, I think it's important to look for, in an outsole, look for an end-use specific design. And this may not be intuitive to people, but, you know, with a little bit of just, you know, perhaps logic, looking at a sole and trying to think about what you need a sole to do, you need a sole to provide secure downhill braking, then you need to look for lugs in the heel area that have sharp leading edges so that when you're going downhill, those leading edges can bite into the soil and stop you securely.
Yep.
You need for uphill traction, you need just the inverse. You need the lugs in the forefoot to have sharp, like 90-degree trailing edges, because those are the edges that are going to bite in and provide uphill thrust.
Right.
Yep. You want to look for lugs that are spaced evenly and broadly so that as the sole flexes, mud and soil built up between the lugs will naturally release.
Right.
And you want to think about the amount of surface area on the sole. If your primary goal is pure performance, you might not necessarily be concerned on durability. And so you might want to look for a sole with small nub-like lugs that don't really have a lot of surface area but are going to penetrate the soil like a cleated soccer shoe. On the other hand, if you're looking for a sole for something like sailing or nautical use or river rafting, slip resistance is derived as much from pure surface area and rubber compound as anything else.
Right.
So
yeah,
it's really just kind of applying a little bit of basic logic to looking at a sole and looking for some of these key design features.
Right. Yep, that's the top design features you look for. Hey, so you're the guy who, if we go to the website, you're the guy who's there talking and doing the video, you know, the YouTube presentations.
Right.
What's that process like? How'd you talk your company into doing that?
Oh, believe me, I had to get talked into that.
Okay.
It wasn't the other way around. No, we thought it would be good to to put together a little video that summarized some of these basic features of what to look for in a high-performance trail running sole, without getting too technical, just so that we could put out a basic understanding of lug design and outsole design for specific end uses. And this might be one of several in the future where we can get out into the public these basic performance features to look for in a well-designed sole.
Right. Was that fun to put together?
Let me say it was challenging, and it was a little uncomfortable to be in front of the camera for the first time, but it was rewarding in that fact to just sort of try something new.
Yeah, it came out well.
Thanks.
So what are the links for your website and anything important you want people to find?
Well, the Vibram website is www.vibram.com or Vibram.com. You can go to Vibram.com or Vibram.com. As long as you spell it the same way, you'll get
either way works.
And we also, as I mentioned before, we have a complete footwear product, which is the first one introduced by Vibram, and that's called Vibram Five Fingers.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about this because you guys are definitely onto something here. I'm seeing a ton of people, at least expressing interest in this, right? It's definitely got the wow factor. So you guys should probably start positioning some manufacturing capacity. I think these are going to be very popular.
The early results are really encouraging, and it's an exciting opportunity for us to launch something into the marketplace that's really totally unique.
Right, and cool.
It is cool. Well, it depends on your viewpoint, but I agree with you. It's cool. And we want to make sure that if, as people go to the website, vibram5fingers.com, and learn a little bit more about it, that it's not to be understood as a replacement for all types of footwear. I mean, there's a fair amount of research that's coming out now that suggests that barefoot running or running in a product that doesn't impede natural biomechanics really has a lot of benefits. But our position is that, for certain activities, you really need a certain amount of protection and stability and traction that wouldn't be delivered by the Five Fingers product. So we think it's a complement to other types of footwear, not a replacement.
Yeah, it's a new product category, not an addition to the shoe category.
Okay.
It's definitely, but I think you're definitely onto something. I'm seeing a lot of interest in that, so we'll probably be seeing some copycats soon.
Have you tried them?
No, I haven't. I'm hoping to. Well, I may have a little bit of a problem because more information than you need to know. I do have a little bit of a webbed toe on a couple of my toes, so I'm curious to see if they'll work or not.
Certainly willing to try.
Yeah, so. But they look really cool, and I was talking to Peter Sagal, who did that review of them in Runner's World, and I thought they would be great for running on the beach,
Yeah.
Where I'd love to run barefoot on the beach, but after like 3 miles, it tears the bottom of your feet up.
Right. Well, that could be a perfect application where you want the sensation of running barefoot, but you need a little bit of protection and traction that you'd get from a Vibram sole.
Right. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. All right. I think we're coming to the end of our rope here, Lawrence.
No, it sounds good. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, this has been a blast. We're actually going to do a contest and give away some of those Patagonia shoes here.
Yeah, I was on your website just earlier and noticed some people already vying for them.
Yeah, so we're going to have to give away some shoes. So that'll be great because I ran in these shoes. Of course, I'm an idiot. First thing I did is I went out and I ran like 17 miles in them, right, in the woods.
Yeah.
Right out of the box on the field,
your
17
shoes.
Miles in the woods. And I, they were fine. I didn't have any problems with them at all. The nice, sturdy shoes, good technical shoes.
Great.
All right.
We'll pass that on to Patagonia.
Yep. I wrote up a review. You can read it.
No, I already have. Thanks.
All right. We'll see you later.
Okay, Chris. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye.
And now for the equipment check.
Hi, Chris. This is Mimi, One Sweeter Life from Twitter, calling to say that I enjoy your podcast very much. Congratulations on your one-year podcasting anniversary. All the interviews are great. Love hearing the tips and about your training and hearing about Buddy, the Wonder Dog. My reason for calling is I saw that Gordon from RunToDisney.com mentioned that you gave him some good tips about how to train on hills, and I realize I have no idea how to run up or down a hill properly, so I was wondering if you could talk about that. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Okay, Mimi, I'm not sure there's an easy answer to this, but I'll do my best. Mimi, One Sweeter Life, at One Sweeter Life on Twitter. This is an interesting question because there are a couple of questions here. One is really how to run hills, and the other is how to train to run hills. And there's two basic situations, right? There's running uphill and there's running downhill, right? So, you know, how to run hills is really the simplest thing is not to be afraid of them, first of all. And also, to if you want to run hills, you got to run hills. You got to train on hills. So it's pretty simple. You know, I see beginners making two critical mistakes. The first one is on the uphills. They see them coming, and they change into this sort of uphill death shuffle before they even get to the hill. So they have this special pace they use for running up hills, which is really, really slow and painful and laborious. And I don't know why they do that. They should choose not to do that. The other mistake is they break on the downhills. You'll see them fighting the downhills, digging in their heels, trying not to go too fast. So those are two mistakes. So if you you don't want to do that. You want to train yourself to maintain your normal running pace and form up and down the hills with some slight adjustments. And as you train on hills and practice on hills, you'll learn a more efficient pace on those. So when you go into an uphill, your effort and your heart rate will go up, but that's okay. You know, you just maintain that normal form, run through the top of the hill, and then settle back into your normal stride and wait for your heart rate to come down because your body will overshoot. So when you get to the top of the hill, you're going to be at max heart rate, and it's going to take a little while for it to come down. On the downhills, you know, it's a great opportunity to pick up speed without any extra effort. And many beginners will dig in their heels and fight. They'll break. It's a waste of energy, a waste of speed. You want to relax, loosen up, lengthen out your stride, and just fly. Let the hill pull you. Don't fight it. And, you know, running is such a specific sport that you have to look at the race you're training for to see how much hill work is in that race. You know, for example, if you're training for the Bay State Marathon, which is really flat, you don't have to do any hill training. Or you can just sneak in a couple of hill repeat sessions at the end of your training program. That'll be enough, right? On the other hand, if you're training a real hilly race, you know, something like the Maine Marathon has some hills in it. You know, most of the marathons around here, you know, or some of the 10Ks have those big hills. You want to work some hills into your training. And there's three basic hill workouts that I've found effective that I use in building confidence and strength. And the first is simply just to run a hilly course. This is okay, but this doesn't really, just find a course that's hilly and practice your form in those hills. But that's not going to give you a whole lot of specificity. The second one is to do longer tempo hill workouts, which is what I usually do. And these are good for longer races or races with longer, bigger hills, like marathons. And the third thing you can do is simple hill charges, like you probably did in high school athletics. And that's good for leg strength and aerobic strength. Now, for the tempo hills, like I do, you want to find a hill that's like somewhere around 800 meters, half mile long, and fairly shallow, maybe 5, 6%, somewhere in there. And you look at the hill and you break it into thirds. You put some markers on it, break it into thirds. And you want to go into the first third at your regular running pace and form. And you notice your heart rate will start creeping up. And when you get to the second third of that hill, drop it into a tempo effort. So like a 7 to an 8 on a 1 to 10 scale. So now you're working pretty hard, but you're still trying to maintain your form and be relaxed. Then when you get to the third, try to pick it up all the way. Try to leave it all out there and finish as hard as you can. And if you can work up to 5 reps of these will give you amazing power on the hills in a race. And, you know, you want to rest between them until your heart rate comes down. But you can also do these as downhills, like if you're training for a race like Boston with a lot of long downhill in it, you can do tempo downhills like this. And the simpler version of this is called hill charges. And what you do is you find a short, steeper hill, so 100, 200 meters long with a 12 to 15% grade on it. And you basically approach it the same as the Temple Hill. Just, you know, you start into it with normal form and you gradually increase your effort till you finish with max effort at the top. And it should really hurt. You should leave it all out there and your heart rate should max and everything should hurt. But that's really good for strength. You know, I got to caution you that doing this stuff is a lot of stress on your legs, so be careful. If something starts to hurt, stop. It's a good way to get injured. You know, if you work hill workout program into your training program, like once a week, you know, you'll have a significant tactical advantage over your competition in a race. You know, when you approach those hills now, you'll smile and accelerate as everyone else fades. So like everything else, there's no great secret to running hills well. You just have to have the confidence and practice that gives you that confidence. So there you go. I hope that helps. Call me if you have any more questions. Okay, folks, that's it. That's episode 74 in the can. It's ironic that on this same Saturday last year, I was running the Mount Washington Road Race, 7.6 miles, 18% the whole way, and it was a blast. And I ran up and I ran down, too. I was training for an ultra at the time. So good luck and congratulations to all my friends running Mount Washington today. And I know Goon Squad member and founder Sarah, the Mountain Goat, will be there. So that's pretty cool. And I remember I did my first recording for the first episode of Road Rod Live when I got down off the mountain. So there you go. It's been raining like crazy for the last few weeks, and it looks like I might get a break today in the weather. Might get a long ride in. I've only got a month to train for the Wilderness 101 Ultra mountain bike race, and then I got to find some way to train for this Ragnar Relay that I signed myself up for as well. I'm pretty healthy. I'm feeling okay. We'll see. Next week, we're going to interview Sarah Stanley. She's one of the interesting people from our community. She's an ultra runner and an interesting person with some interesting thoughts. And she talks about, you know, doing something with your life and giving back and other stuff. And she's quite a talker, so that's good for me because I won't have to say much. Good for you, too, because I won't have to say much. A shout out to Iron Brandon from Brandon's Marathon, the podcast, who sent me some content, which is very interesting. And I'll get to that. Sorry I couldn't get it in this week. I'm already going to be really long this week, so I'll get that into the next show. As always, if you have a charity, a blog, or something that you want to call attention to, and it's not too overtly mercenary, you can feel free to do the voiceover for the beginning of my show or send me a you know, 1 to 2 minute promo and I'll try to sneak it in. The script for the voiceover is on the front page of my website. Just read it into an audio or leave it as a message on my dial-in number and we're good to go. Love it. And if you want to find me, it's cyktrussell@yahoo.com. That's Chris Yellow King Tom Russell, 2 S's 2 L's @yahoo.com. And the website is www.runrunlive.com. And a big thanks to Andy Lines for helping me fix my forums this week and my .NET nuke. Good man. So our community is very helpful. And I'm also at CYKT Russell on Twitter. And now you can find me as CYKT Russell on Facebook as well. I added some videos this week of Buddy the Wonder Dog and I out trail running. And also Anthony and I out mountain biking, which means me crashing into things. It's summertime and the living is frenetic. Sean, that means crazy busy. And things are weird with the economy and work and the world and everything. But we can't change that. And we can't change yesterday. All we've got to work with is today. So let's make it a good one and one that we can be proud of. And I, my friends, will see you out there. For your music tonight, I'm going to mellow you out a bit. If you're running, don't fall into a trance and run off a cliff. I know I've done this before. This is Dub Praja by Profetas de Zion. Chill, baby.
Listening to the Run Run Live podcast. Comments and suggestions can be made on our listener comment line at 206-339-7804 or via email at chrisrunner@runrunlive.com. That's our website. Go to the website, check it out for articles and my blog and other great stuff. If you would like to be on the show, or have a suggestion as someone you would like me to have on the show, drop me a line, and I will see you out there.
Run, run, live. The podcast for all your running needs.